CKUT is a messenger, teaching the youth about roots and culture. And tell the massive them to remember Jah. That's all I had in with. I am well, well. 90.3 FM. It's CKUT, the cultural radio station. Radio McGill. Blessed love. The messenger. Take it away.
Make sure my levels are at around 8.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's kind of a tongue twister.
Am I popping my peas?
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Start again.
Oh, should I do that? Okay.
I need a script.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
I think... So, you want me to go through it again and actually say that?
This sounds so repetitive.
See, now I can't do it. Once more, okay.
CKUT 90.3 FM.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Wait, wait, do you want me to say hello?
I'll have to do another one.
Yeah, maybe one last one.
Radio CKUT 90.3 FM.
Are you recording?
You are?
Oh. Can you press stop?
What made you drop out?
Well, a lot of people think it was a 400 acid trip they took, you know.
Uh-huh, but what was it really, Bob?
One day I played CKUT in 90.3.
Then what happened?
I saw God.
You I saw God. That. Well, that sounds like true enlightenment to me,
yeah,
Bob.
Yeah, we did, Bob.
And on the seventh day, the Lord said,
let there be a CKUT.
F-Files Radio.
Exploring feminism and technology through space and time.
My name is Sabrina Ratti. I'm a video artist. I make installations, live performances, prints, sculptures, everything that has to do with digital art or more video art. And I mix analog tools with digital tools. And my work is really inspired by architecture and the idea of the virtual, the physical. And I like to create painting in motions, things like that.
So, could you tell us a little bit about your relationship with technology, whether as tool, as medium, as well as a subject of your work?
Sure. Technology is, for me, a way to create a language. Like, I find that when I work on a video, for example, it's a lot like a dialogue with my tools. So, like, with a video synthesizer or with a 3D animation software, there's always like some surprises that arise, like some accidents, but also, you know, creating this world that I guess I relate to or I want to change. So it's always a dialogue. So I'd say that I couldn't obviously do what I do without the technology, but it's not about the technology. It's mostly a mean to create, you know, beautiful images or other worlds kind of effect.
And so a lot of your work kind of explores the thin and very complex barrier between the virtual and the real. And when it comes to the actual process of your work, I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about how you translate the textures of reality into virtual spaces.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess it's always relative to different projects, because some projects are really more like are much more abstract, and others are definitely have elements taken from reality. For example, the project Machine for Living was inspired by the new towns surrounding Paris, the architecture of these places that is very unique. And I wanted to try and translate this feeling I had when visiting these very utopian / dystopian space where it's like it's really powerful emotions that you get from visiting some architecture. So basically I just it's an interesting like the relationship I had with this project between the virtual and the reality, because I've discovered these places through images, so on the internet, through books. So I had a virtual kind of experience of this place, and then I went to visit them in reality, and it was such a powerful experience. So, and the challenge was to bring it back into virtual, but with my own vision, with my my tools, with and trying to achieve that feeling into virtual. So for this project, I took pictures of the facades and I integrated them into 3D. So there's like this notion almost of documentation, but also something very surreal about these impossible architectures. But other projects like Biomes or Radiance are more inspired by paintings. So like almost like a reality that has always already been transformed, and that glimpse of recognizable shapes, but it's not relating to any specific reality in itself.
I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about nature in the same way, or the natural, and how it's kind of embodied or disembodied within your digital landscapes or your digital paintings.
I think that even when you create abstract shapes, you're always in this world that you are referring to, even if it's not your intention. So it's interesting for me to actually create landscape that reminds me of real, like nature or water or flowers, but that in the same time to abstract them so much that it's mostly just a suggestion, but it's not really what, you know, it's people, like the viewer, doesn't necessarily have to think it's water or flower, it could be anything else. So it's like to open up maybe reality to another dimension.
That's perfect. And do you think something is gained or lost in the translation of this information?
I don't think there's lost or gain. I think it's just the transformation.
So for you, what do you believe are the ties between the imagined and the technological? And even further, you know, what is the function of the imagination within your work?
I mean, of course, imagination is everything, because you're creating a language, and the technology helps you to do it. But I mean, when I conceptualize a work, for example, it's very rare I have an image very clear of what I'm gonna do. It comes through the process, and that's when I guess the imagination comes into play. Is that how can I change this element, or can I remove one and create a weird reality out of this? And it's mostly playing with elements that almost like a puzzle, and then you're trying to find solution in a creative way. So yeah, I guess that's what I'd have to say about this.
And that's really interesting that you were saying how you never start with a clear image. Mm-hmm. It's kind of just like you're pulling apart.
Yeah, actually, it's something that I've realized lately is that when I start working, it's like a very vague impression. Like it's like you want to recreate an ambience or a very abstract feeling through colors, through form, through architecture, but it's very vague. So I guess when you create, it's a way to concretize this abstract emotion or idea.
It's also interesting that you say that, because since your work is inspired by architecture, mm-hmm. which in my mind is so concrete.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the play between the concrete and the abstract is
super
true. Interesting.
And yeah. I think that's kind of what I like also about architecture, is that it's very, functional. You know, you make architecture for a function, but sometimes, you know, there's there are architects that think about also beauty and form, but it's mostly functional, and I think that's where I can find my freedom, is to detach it from function and just use it for its aesthetic and its ambience and its atmosphere, and like I can dream of useless architectures and it becomes, you know, sculpture, it becomes just surreal spaces in which you can wander, and it, you know, it serves no purpose, and I really like this idea.
Can you discuss the ephemeral properties of our current reality and why you choose to translate these ephemeralities into something tangible? So I guess after kind of talking to you for a little bit, maybe kind of the way that you were just talking about architecture, in that you like to think about it beyond its use function. How it has all of these like imagined realities, but it doesn't necessarily have to be something concrete. Mm-hmm. And I feel like your work really has the ability to kind of translate these, you know, ideas into something that exists in a form. I don't know if that helps clarify.
Yeah, I mean, it's to make the reality tangible that was that puzzled me a little bit, because tangible for me is like a table, I don't know, like, so for me art or video, or it's, I guess we could say, to crystallize it, like fix it in time through a piece of art. Okay. Because in the ephemeral reality, when I read that, I was thinking maybe the closer I can relate to this idea would be, for example, how we project things, you know, psychological projection. Because reality to me is ephemeral in that sense, that we perceive things based on our experience, and we are constantly changing. So we don't see, for example, the same space the same way twice if we go and have some experience in that space. So for me, reality is always being transformed and changed in a psychological way. And so I try to translate this into video as well, like this idea that the space is merging into another one, or that you can't grasp reality, because finally, what is it? What is reality? How it's just an interpretation. It's also a human, you know, vision. So it's very anthropocentric how we see reality. So it's really fascinating to me, this idea, because we need to believe that things exist and that they're real, but in the same time, we don't have to be stuck in a little box of definition. We can try to expand and see how we can find new meanings to this reality.
That's perfect. Yeah. Could you describe the ways in which your work is both able to represent as well as abstract this idea that you're talking about?
Can I describe? It's a little bit, like I said, when I start to work on a project, it's like an abstract feeling that you're trying to make a bit more clear, or, you know, to express with different elements. Like, I like this idea of ambiguity, where you're not really sure if what you're seeing is completely dreamy and you'd love to wander in it, or actually maybe not. Maybe you'd prefer to stay out of it. And I'm trying to make beautiful images, but that also have this kind of ambiguous feel to them. Something almost terrifying, you know, because something really beautiful is almost terrifying to me. And I think that's where also the idea of the sublime comes into play, because there's something bigger than what we feel in this idea of sublime. It's like you feel something, but you can't reach it. Or, like, Machine for Living is maybe the one, like, I just finished it, so I talk more about this one, but I find that, like, with the, also the sound and the way that it's edited, it's really slow, very hypnotic. It leaves a lot of space for projection, psychological projection.
So I guess I want to ask you now about this idea of the sublime as it relates to architecture in general or brutalist architecture. I'm kind of wondering, what are your thoughts on the relationship between architecture in general, oppression, and sound, and, as well as image?
It's interesting because I'm going to link up with, you know, the project Machine for Living, because when I visited, for example, Les Espaces d'Abraxas, which is like a huge habitation building, there's like 600 apartments in there. It was built in the 60s or 70s, and it's like kind of Greco-Romain, like kind of aesthetic. Like there's like an arch, and it's like pink, very Mediterranean. But then it's so huge and oppressive that it's kind of like a dreamy jail. Like when I went in there, I was like, oh my God, like it's so intense. And that's, you know, it comes back to this idea of beautiful and terrifying at the same time. And it's like, so I think brutalist architecture has a lot of these ambience with them, because they're so massive and almost aggressive in some ways. Like they're there, you can't avoid them, and you feel small, and it's almost not human size. But in the same time, the shapes are so pure and minimal that it's a really beautiful aesthetic experience. So I think there's a lot to do about it. And also the time when those architecture were built, and like there's a true like utopian idea of creating like, you know, for example, the perfect city, the perfect building that will last forever or something. And then there is this new form emerging, like modernism. So it's like you feel the time through this architecture. And it's fascinating also to see that today some of these architecture have become kind of like the symbol of a nightmare, you know, like how many horror films have been shot, and this kind of, like, I'm thinking of Cronenberg, of course, but like even Les Espaces d'Abraxas, they shot, I think, Brazil, or some Hunger Games scenes. But it's, so I think this kind of architecture really embody this idea of utopia and dystopia in such complex way, in so many ways.
I was also wondering about sound in relationship to these spaces. I know for Machine for Living, you worked with a sound artist. I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that collaboration and kind of how sound relates back to these ideas of like the utopian city, or, you know, and as well as this kind of oppression that...
Yeah, I mean, I must say, most of my videos, the sound are made by Roger Tellier-Craig, except for one that was actually made by Andrea Jane Cornell. But that's the only video that I made with someone else. And Roger is, we've been working together for so long that now, like, we're really, like, on the same page when I want something, because, like, we've developed this language together, too. And I have this, I guess, a very utopian idea for sound, I don't know, that I'm always looking for the most neutral sound possible, because I find there's a lot of sound that is connoted with emotions, or, you know, all of a sudden it becomes dark or too happy, and it really gives a tone to the image that, you know, I don't want sometimes. So for Machine for Living, for example, I was like, you know, I want to feel almost that it's a machine-like kind of installation, like that the you almost like look at the architecture sitting on a crane going on top of it, like there's something very mechanical about it. But I didn't want it to be too dark or like, you know, but it's a little bit oppressive, but I think it works. There's a lot of drones and some textures. So it's really, I guess, it complements the image without overbearing it, and gives help giving an atmosphere ambience. But it's always a challenge to work with sound, and I like to keep it minimal. But sometimes I do want something very connoted. Like, it happens that I want something like some really kitsch or really, like, it really depends on the project.
Of course.
Yeah.
I love this idea of the neutral sound, though, kind of existing within this space that you've already exactly. created and not adding any unnecessary emotion mm-hmm. or suggesting anything to the viewer.
Exactly. Yeah. This is kind of my also obsession, is to give space to the viewer to project like what he wants inside of the image. Not even though I know what I'm like, I have an idea of what I want to create, I also want that this can be free for the viewer to interpret.
That's great.
Thanks.
I feel like that's rare in art, but
yeah, I mean, I think since they are abstract emotion, they tend to infiltrate every image, but it's not overpowering, maybe. But I don't necessarily my work to be neutral, like in the sense that I want the sound to be neutral and leave a lot of space, but I also, you know, try to communicate somehow some things, but it's not imposed, you know, it's not in your face. And I really love it when people are like this, like, you know, have an experience from my work that is completely different from what I was expecting, because I'm like, that means that I've succeeded in this way. Like.
Mm-hmm. And I find that a lot of your recent work has featured this same kind of color scheme, which is these muted pastel tones and metallics. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about how these colors and tones relate to the dominant themes of your work, if they do at all. Kind of like, do you see these as the colors of the machine, the virtual, the uncanny, or none of those things?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to, because every video has a definitely different color palette. Some colors comes back a lot. For example, like the Siri biomes, that is like some kind of a world where humans would have been extinct, and there's these weird entities that are rising from surreal landscape. Like, it's really different completely from Machine for Living. But like, it's like four, I see that as four biomes, so there's one that's more yellowish brown, more blue and white, and another one more pink, and one turquoise. Like, so I guess I just, you know, when I start on a color palette, I like to explore all of the subtlety of it, but it's really like there's something I like to think of. I like to think about video as paintings. You know, you're painting with light. It's so really, when I choose colors, they come to me a little bit intuitively, and then this is just fun to like have nice colors, I guess. Like, I'm having fun, and I guess it helps to underline some ambience I try to maybe create. But I don't know how, like, in terms of meaning, I don't know if it's that conscious, you know. It's not like a conscious decision, like, this blue means this. It's, I guess, more like for the overall ambience, like what it creates as an impression.
When thinking about everyday life or the quotidian, what do you believe is the role of the uncanny? And I ask this because I find, as we're talking about the real and the virtual, that this kind of uncanny element plays out in a lot of your work.
I do. If I understand well uncanny, I guess it can take a lot of meaning too, but I know, for example, I've been always inspired by, like, wandering the streets at night and, you know, seeing one window with a weird color, like, illuminated, or, you know, like, finding ambience that seem a bit out of this world, but it in very daily life context, like, super banal context. And I think that's a sensibility that helps me also to create my videos, because I like that there's always a thing that makes it strange in some ways, that you're not dealing with a reality you completely understand, and this like brings us back to this idea that there's always an element in reality that we don't understand that keeps us, I guess, going. Yeah, I mean, I just like when things are weird. And it's raising questions, but it's also sometimes just, you just want to let yourself go with it and like go with the flow and be just like, wow, this is so weird and I love it and I don't know why, and this brings new reflections, new emotions.
Ago, in Montreal City, there was a great emptiness, without any kind of sound, without any kind of harmony, without any kind of voice. Only a hideous monster, the monster of the silence, and his horrible laughing. The crew monster had been covered the mouth of every citizen from Montreal with a lot of stronger species of masking tape in order to keep quiet any opinion or disagreement. The Black Hand Productions presents The Seven Warriors, the battle for the voice of the voiceless.
In 1987, those seven warriors, most of them volunteers, without any kind of payment, found an effective weapon against the monster. They worked for a Ville community radio station, CKUT 90.3 FM, which waves destroyed the monster of the silence. The malefic creature couldn't resist a community radio station with intelligence radio shows, truthful and impartial news, excellent music programming, and the most important.
CKUT is a community radio station that right now is the voice of the voiceless.
The monster died 20 years ago. And today, the Montrealers have democratic media communication, which one they can express their opinions in complete freedom, without any piece of masking tape in their mouths.
Nowadays, other seven warriors are taking care CKUT, but without the over of 200 volunteers working, it's impossible to be on air. Do you want to be a volunteer in CKUT? Yes, of course, you want. Don't forget the battle for the voice of the voiceless. Never end.
CKUT on the air, live for CKUT. Oh, what? CKUT. CKUT.